allocated, I say 42 billion for the 2021 academic year, and this budget is split between the colleges and the universities. And I think this increasing budget was informed by the higher demand for NSFAS bursaries, as the community may already be aware that for the university sector, we ended with a budget shortfall in 2020 academic year, hence the additional budget that was granted to us. And at the same time, we are not anticipating any shortfalls in the CVET sector. We are working very closely with the department in terms of managing the funding in the sector in terms of applying the 50-40% funding model. Now, looking at where we are for how we are utilizing the DHET fund for universities year to date, perhaps just to mention and to go back to the presentation that was made at the DGG, Dr. Lewin, most institutions of higher learning started the academic program in March of 2021. And for that, NSFAS was needing to pay allowances to students in order to be able to continue the academic program. And we made an advance of 7.9 billion to cover the first 2 months of allowances in the university sector. Now, this advance were made on the at a background of students that NSFAS had funded from for the 2021 program. And what that means is that the money is given to the institutions, and the institutions then use our funding reports to advance the money further to the students. So in that sense, Chair, what we ask institutions to do is to then provide to us reports of which are the students that were paid from the advance payments. And as we do that, we enable NSFAS to then receive registration. In fact, we allow institutions to finalize their registration processes and to correctly submit claims to NSFAS. We remember that in as much as NSFAS does make provisional funding allocation and for the universities, the figure of 940,917 in 2021, when they secure a space and also when they register for approved funded qualifications. So to that effect, we have to date received 422,786 registration records from the universities. We have taken a deeper analysis of the submissions of universities, and what we are seeing in the work is that there is still a lot of work to be done by the various institutions in finalizing registration processes and submitting comprehensive claims to NSFAS. We are also comparing what we are seeing in the submitted data with the 2020 statistics in order to assess whether we are actually matching up or there are still a lot that is still remaining at the institution. This is also to help us to project the budget for the year and to be able to determine at what point NSFAS can be able to implement adjustments and to communicate as necessary to the institution so that we do not go over the allocated budget for the 2021 academic year. As it stands, we will be closing registrations for all universities by the 31 of May 2021. From our analysis, Chair, we are picking up a few institutions that are far behind or have not submitted any registrations at this point to NSFAS. And I'm just giving an example of the three that we are noting for the committee to note. At the Tshwane University of Technology, they have not yet submitted the registration data for the 2021 academic year. the university has reached out to NSFAS and taken us into confidence as to what are the challenges and the issues that are making it impossible for them to submit the registration to NSFAS, as we have communicated the timelines with them, and they have given us an undertaking that all registrations will be submitted to NSFAS by the 31 of May. The university has also taken us into confidence that they have put plans in place to make sure that they will continue to advance allowances to students so that there is minimal disruption at the institution. So working with NSFAS, working with the institution chair, we do believe that we will manage this process and the University of Technology and the students to also control any. The University of Limpopo is another one that has submitted to NSFAS very low numbers for the 2021 academic year. The issue there is the issue of billing for accommodation. Most students in this universities that are funded by NSFAS are residing in private accommodations, and the institutional processes to accredit and to claim correctly to NSFAS seem to have been delayed. Again, they have reached out to ourselves to indicate the challenges that they are experiencing. We are looking at ways and means in which they can submit the complete claim and still compliant so that we can process the payment for the students. The University of Venda is another one, Chair, where also the numbers are quite significantly low. And in our engagement with them, we picked up that there is issues of qualification, and the university is addressing those. So just to highlight a few ones, Chair, but in general, when compared to 2020, across the board, universities have managed to submit their registration data to NSFAS. The overall figure for 2020 was just over 500,000, and we are currently sitting on 422,000. So you can see a significant increase in the submission of registration for universities. So in this slide, this is just where we are highlighting the three universities that I have spoken to. And again, what I've been talking about, the University of Johannesburg. University of Johannesburg has got quite a high number of students that NSFAS has provisionally funded. But when we look at the registration, again, the numbers are quite low. The university has not reached out to us yet, but we are making plans to reach out to them and find out what are the issues and whether these numbers are the real numbers that NSFAS must work on for the 2021 academic year. In terms of the TZ funding, we have made provisional funding available to 456,754 students. And to date, we have received from the sector 195,300 registration requests for annual semester one and trimester one. And again, as per the presentation, we have the sector that is quite a staggered submission of registration from all the institutions. And we have adopted an approach that seeks to almost pair TVET colleges on a weekly basis to try and catch up as much payments as possible. Now, from the funding of continuing students in the sector, we raised the concern of the high failure rates of students that were funded last year. I think there's over 80,000 students that did not progress, and we have obtained approval from the department to engage with institutions to try and understand and where possible to see if some of the students they can continue to be funded. In terms of the payments that have been made, 154,619 students received the payment and to the value of 1.7 billion. And as I mentioned, we are doing catch-up payments for all the students. We pay weekly, to accommodate the registrations that come after a disbursement run has been concluded. Okay, then I think here it's just to break down. I think the big issue that we have as NSFAS is the issue of exception, and the main focus, and I think what the CEO and the board have really alerted us to doing, is to monitor the registration in terms of the number of students that we get from the institutions, to monitor and unpack the exceptions so that the students that sit in exceptions, they find a way to be involved. That's why for all the registration that is received, we have to identify different pockets of issues and what could be the causes of such issues as we work towards remediating those issues and making sure that we do not have students that are stuck in processes that are not being resolved. So this is just a model that shows we are tracking, we received 195,000 records, how much have we paid, how many have we not paid, and what are the reasons why we are not paying the students that we are not paying them. And in there, the reasons that I may just mention is that we may find that some students there's incorrect course information in that regard. This person has to either correct the course or to make sure that the student then is registered for an appropriate course. We have had to also pay some of the students manually as we were improving on some of the systems earlier on in the process. And again, when we link or we began the system basis, that's when we pick up that we have made some errors. So these are all the issues that potentially become problems and explosives, and which we are checking to make sure that they do not destabilize the sector. This is just the tracking again of the payments. As I mentioned, we are tracking per institution how many registrations have been received, how many students have been paid, and the value of the payments. And hence, we are able to pick up now where we are falling behind in terms of our payment plans. And currently, for the TVS, we have 7,754 students that had registration exceptions which were incorrectly rejected by NSFAS, and those students were then funded manually by NSFAS up until corrections on the system were rectified. And what this means is that after being funded manually, then also they had to be paid manually. I have spoken to the initial slow submission of registration claims from NSFAS and how we adapted to paying on a regular basis after serious stakeholder engagement with support and all the stakeholders. Now, what we are currently doing to make sure that we get as much data in, we have sent the servicing team to the colleges to assist with the submission of registration data, and this team has been out in the field from April. And hence, now we are beginning to see the increasing number of claims come in, and we are able to then implement the changes as it were. The teams are also sent to colleges to assist with any outstanding registration information and to support the T2 application period for NSFAS, and also to deal with the NSFAS wallet issues. We get a lot of queries from the blocked and the locked accounts of NSFAS wallet. This is where the students are being paid directly to their cell phones, and there are issues where their PINs are forgotten. So to try and minimize the impact of this and to try and educate students about the use of the wallet, the teams are in the colleges to also now on appeals in a pain point for NSFAS. One of the enhancements of the system for 2021 appeals was that for first-time entry students, as a student gets rejected, immediately that student should be able to apply, and that student should be able to be processed and obtain a funding status. So to that effect, for new students, we have received for 2021, 17,590 appeals, of which 6,790 were approved and 7,858 rejected. The reasons, main reasons for rejection are students that are exceeding the income threshold and or students that are already exceeding the income threshold in the main, and also students that are presenting information that really does not match with what we are picking up from SASA or what we are picking up from the Department of Home Affairs. And for these students, we ask them to submit additional information that will help us to make decisions. For those that submit, we're able to convert and to review the application, the appeal application, and make a decision. But we are still waiting on 2,609 motivations for us to be able to finalize. We may not be able to do anything on the 2609 if the students do not submit any supporting evidence. Again, for 2021 continuing student appeals, another pain point in MAFSA's processes, there are new improvements that were introduced for 2021. One was to look at the guideline and to actually apportion responsibility to the institutions to deal with progression. We received a lot of progression appeals in our process, which was centralized in the prior year. The appeal process now is quite decentralized to institution, in the sense that any appeal that is progression, the institution must make a determination whether that student progresses or not and submit registration to MESPAS. We are seeing really significant improvement in that regard in terms of just looking at the numbers that are coming in, even though the appeal cycle still remains open to accommodate all the registration processes that are available. And then the second initiative was to develop tools of enabling appeals to be submitted and appeals to be reviewed real time, so that we also deal away with the issue of students sitting long time and not getting any feedback on their appeals. So, Chair, by the 31st of May, we are intending to be done with appeals, and we should be able to provide an appeals report that closes the season of appeals by the first week of June 2021. I do believe, Chair, I think there has been a lot of effort that has been put in trying and listening to the student queries, and really there has been significant process improvement on the processing of appeals. In terms of the digital learning devices, NESFAS has also developed an online portal where students can actually do self-service, check the devices that they want to have, make their own choices, and then complete the order form that they will submit to their own institution so that the institution can verify that the student is at the institution and that the student is registered as per the guidelines that have been shared with the institution. There are four companies that have offered to provide their devices to NESFAS currently. There is one that is actually giving us the laptop, and then on there's four types of laptops that the students may choose from, and these laptops come with the Microsoft Office included as a package. Some of the challenges that we are experiencing on this project is the impact of COVID on the stock availability of the learning devices. And in terms of our plans and the schedules to have received and distributed, we have experienced some challenges, and we have had to go back to Treasury in terms of coming up with alternatives of what other options we can look at from the dealers that have supplied, and in order that we can increase the stock available. We have revised the delivery date is in line with the stock that we received in May. We are expecting to receive quite a significant consignment in July and also in December. So, Chair, despite the challenges, there has been extensive engagement with the stakeholders on the laptop, on the universities, as well as the student leadership. Same page in terms of what the issues are, the processes that they need to order and claim, and reducing that as soon as we get enough stock, so then we will start the delivery process. With that, Chair, I would like to thank you and hand over back to you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, COO, for the presentation. You can now stop sharing with us. Thank you. DM, do you want to make some concluding remarks before I hand over to Honorable Nchavile for the Q&A session? DM? Okay, it doesn't look like the Deputy Minister is on the platform. CEO, if you can just switch off the video and mute your mic. Thank you for the presentation. I think in the absence of closing remarks from the Deputy Minister, I think we are now going to get into a discussion. Honorable Chavileng, are you on the platform?
Yes, Chair, I am.
Can take over from here. Thank you, sir.
Okay, good morning, Chair. Good morning to the honorable members from the NA and the NCOP. You're welcome. And thanks again to the DG, the DM, I think is kicked out of the meeting for now. A great thank you again to Ndade Khosa. Let me take this opportunity to first, this is our first meeting as the CLEP committee with a brand new NS passport. And let me take this advantage and say welcome to Ndade Khosa and the board. Today is the beginning of a long process of engagement in pursuance of a noble cause, the lifting of South Africans from poverty through provision of funding for education at the tertiary level. It is a noble cause indeed, and welcome Ndade Khosa, and we will be with you all the time. And as for previous board and the change manager there, and we hoping to have the same relationship with your own selves as time goes. Panel members, this time for questions. We have had the presentation from the higher education team. And this is time for engagement, members. I would like to say, Chairperson, that there are these new universities in Mpumalanga, I think the Northern Cape and others. I just want to check with the department because, we have a problem of accommodation for students at universities. And thus most students find themselves seeking accommodation in villages near the university. A good example of that is the University of Mpumalanga in Siyabuswa, where students are in villages, and in many instances in those villages around the university, there won't be water and electricity for days. Now, what I want to check is, what is our engagement with COPTA at the national level and provincial levels to ensure that those communities that are around the universities, because they are part of the university complex somehow, that they should be preferred for services. The reason it will be poor. No electricity, you've got to go fetch water in the river, you know, or it's just not on. We need to find a way of making life bearable for those students who are in those emerging universities. I want to check with this zero rate at the website, TM. What do the analysts say about this zero rate at the what have you learned from them? You have said some other things, but I want to check, for example, how many students were able to access this site? Because we are from the NCOPS, the select committee, we want to know, get information and province by province and breakdown. How many students were able to access this website, province by province? And there's a reason, you know, that's the department, that of ensuring that there's continuous learning and learning and teaching. Lastly, is there a correlation between the accessing of the zero rate at the site and performance? That would be that from me for now, Chairperson. Honourable members, the meeting is open for engagement. And I'll ask the team, the support team, to help me with the names of those who were first. From what I see Chantel King, Teboho Letsie, followed by Sina Otambo, and then the main Christian. In that order.
Good morning, everyone, and Chairperson. I don't have a lot of questions because we've dealt with some of the issues in previous engagements. My concern, basically, that I would like to raise when we consider the multimodal teaching, is exactly what you just raised, Chairperson, to say that at some villages and in rural towns, we will have challenges where some of the students actually could not complete the assessments, they could not complete the exam. Well, I've received some emails from students, specifically UNIS students, where they had challenges in completing the assignments and the exams. There were even challenges where there were things appearing on the screen of the exam, and because they are not really much knowledgeable in technology, they didn't know what to do, hence they failed subjects. So my question would basically be, after the research that they've conducted, how many of these students at university specifically could complete the exams, and have they made an assessment of how many of the students could not complete the exams and the reasons why they could not complete the exams? Because this would be a challenge for some people that might, just by failing, fall into the N+2 rule, which basically means at some stage they will be financially not eligible to get NEFSA funding. Then also, most of the universities, how many of them have actually managed to convert the curricula onto an online platform to make it easier for students to have access to? For instance, you will find that, especially in conditions, are still struggling to move onto online curricula, and then they still depend on students coming in on a face-to-face basis for teaching and learning. By now, we should have had a proper assessment, so if we can get this. Now I'm moving over strictly to NEFSA. Yes, NEFSA, we see that you've given institutions up until the end of May to end in the appeal. But on the parliamentary question, which I've just received answers on yesterday, it stated that 29,140 students that were on NEFSA either received their payments very late, which means they ran, some of them are still struggling to register because of that challenges that they have, and others, their payments were never even completed. They're still waiting on funding. The appeal process, you also mentioned that it takes 30 days for an appeal to go through, also on my parliamentary question. So my concern would basically be, it's a life crime series that was presented, so how would it take 30 days for an appeal? I do understand that some have issues on registration data, some are duplicates, but 30 days is basically a very long time for a student that needs to know within a period of a week or two if they will be funded. So realistically, how long will it take for an appeal to go through on average per student if it is not 30 days? We also had the issue where I went for oversight at DUT, where you would find that the online learning, for the department as well, the online learning actually excluded many first-time entrants from entering the institution. And then the department, the DUT, then found themselves in a situation where most of the faculties didn't have the exact numbers for them to make a full component of first-year students. And they had to go outside and try to get more students to come to the universities. And we saw the wrongful email that went out by the student command, and we had that stampede because the information was wrongly sent out. So I would like to know how many first-year entrance students who could not apply online, so how many of them were actually rejected from not coming to the university because they couldn't apply online. Hence, we had lower numbers than what initially was anticipated. And then on the university's laptop initiative, that's the last one, we've been asking numerous occasions when will this process begin. We are seeing now that there are quite a few laptops that were May, July, and late going and doing oversight at Westwood universities. One thing that came and that was constantly highlighted was the NESA initiative was wrongly instituted, that it is linked to the book allowances, that students now either have to choose, are you buying a textbook or are you going to a laptop? So I'd just like to get some clarity on how that allowance will be distributed in the future, and I would also like to get clear clarity on when the distribution would start and how much per institution will be distributed, because you know it would only be now first year entrants that might require the funding. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes. The next person will be here in that order.
No, thank you very much, Sabine. I think let's welcome the presentation from well, the open remarks from the DM, very proper opening remarks, set the tone for the meeting, the presentation from the department, from the university branch and the TVET branch, and then the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. I do have quite a number of questions. Some of them sent to me by Honorable Malamiso, who is now writing an exam at this time. So just bear with me. I think maybe one, let me start with the TVET colleges. Some of the TVET colleges, when you go to them, you realize that really the infrastructure is very bad, and in more ways than one, they do return the infrastructure grants meant to uplift the infrastructure of these institutions. is it possible that they could have used some of that money of the infrastructure grants to upgrade, I mean, some of their classes? I mean, maybe let's have a program to assist TVET colleges to use this grant, because I'm sure in the past 5 years there would have been money going back to treasury because money was not used at these institutions for this infrastructure grant. We do also give, is it also possible, Sandy, that some of this money that is not used by these universities doesn't go back to treasury. In fact, we somehow find a way of converting it into paying for our historic debt. Well, it remains in institutions, but it, you know, it covers the historic debt. So at the university, the department's presentation, the only presentation really on university and TVET, there was nothing on CET. There was also nothing on the skills development branch of the department. Why is it so? Especially on placement of students in the workplace for work-related learning, trade test, learnership, artisan development, and so forth and so on. Chair, I think on also on skills development, you know, they could have taken us through what is it that they've been doing. I mean, the kind of courses, how they were administered during COVID-19, the first and the second wave. I think it is also clear that the third wave of COVID-19 spread is upon us. I think all of us have, you know, have accepted that it is here. It's like Philip of 2010. And obviously, this will require continuation and strengthening of this multimodal learning. Department, whether the department and PISA sector institutions are ready. By PISA sector institution, I mean universities, TVET colleges, skills development, CETAs, and CETs, whether you guys are ready financially and through other interventions to respond to the impact of this third wave, and how are you prepared for such. That work is currently in place to ensure that the 2021 academic year will end in December and not spill into the first part of 2022 or the first quarter of 2022 as it happened this year. What work are you putting in place to making sure that we close the 2021 academic year in December, having noted the financial constraints in the fiscal, and that, you know, we gave a five year. There's also been cuts in the infrastructure efficiency grants to universities and TVET colleges. How will this affect their ICT program or ICT infrastructure at these institutions? The investing sector, in fact, from 2014, this one, the investing sector has been calling for the National Digital Library for the whole sector, like I said, since 2014. What work has been done in this regard, and whether progress has been made in this regard, whether the department has assessed the dropout and retention rate of students for the 2020 academic year. If so, what is the dropout rate for the 2020 academic year compared to the previous academic year? On the registration for this year, at TVET, Mr. Zungu, you have indicated that enrollment at some of TVET colleges was affected by delays in the release of the results. What caused the delays in the results of, in the release of the results? When are the results going to be released? And if they are released, when were they released? How many students were impacted by the delays across the sector, especially with the eligibility for NSFAS funding? What mechanisms, if any, are put in place to address the delays in the release of students going for of funded students going forward? And as far as the funded students in historic debt, is the department confident that all students are aware of their debt relief, of this debt relief thing that you guys have? Where they can still apply for it at the institution, and how is the process? Maybe just make it clear so that everybody is on the same page. what percentage of this 14 billion debt is owed by NSFAS funded students who are funded under the old regime or who are funded under the old regime? And then National Student Financial Aid Scheme, at 5.2, you're noting the high failure rate of TVET students. How confident are we at NSFAS about this record, given the incident of the students from Capricorn University, of Capricorn College, who I spoke about last week, all her subjects, but the result only sent one result, only one subject. So are we sure that this high failure rate is a true reflection, having noted that with this one of Capricorn and Mbopo shows that it is not what you have, the record that you have or that you may have been receiving from institutions may not be a true reflection of what is on the ground? And are you doing due diligence to check the results before rejecting the students on the basis of them not meeting the academic requirements? Speaking about this young child from Capricorn, the status has changed from last time. They are now funded, but there's not been anything. It's only a status change. No allowances have been paid. She uses, I think she's paid by directly by you. So she screens the self-banked wallet, which shows that she has absolutely nothing in the account, which is 00, and the status was changed last week, Tuesday. So it has taken 8 days, at least from that day. So from the beginning of the year, the child has not received anything. They've not received no money, nothing, and we expect them to progress academically. So maybe also let's address that part of the speedy resolving such things. There was one I mentioned again last week when you were at your offices at NSFAS, a very university student who was also status changed to funded, and then later on it changed to unfunded. Later on it changed to funded, but nothing has happened. So, you know, there seems to be the consistency, really, of NSFAS system not behaving. Maybe if you can continue, you know, working on it, make sure that the students, you know, at the end of everything, the aspect of the stress, unnecessary stress that we see. Maybe in closing, I think when we maybe I just mentioned this, when we had NSFAS and in Chabelin, the portfolio committee, we saw the good work that the new board and the new administration is doing at NSFAS. We just want to wish them well, hope that they will turn the institution around and support them. As long as are resolved speedily, you know, students are not given the runaround. Students who are funded do receive money, because this money is really important to them. And then lastly, to NSFAS, on the University of Limpopo, you said the University of Limpopo has delayed accreditation for accrediting private accommodators. How are these delays affecting students who are supposed to pay for residence fees? These institutions like TUT have not submitted the registration data. How does it affect the institution's ability to run effectively? Having noted that if you don't have registration data, you don't give them any allowances, you don't give them anything, you don't pay them anything. How is this going? How is this going to negatively affect registered students at those institutions? Thank you very much, for the patience. Thanks.
Yeah, I gave you that time because you took on questions that were supposed to be asked by a member who is not in. Who is next on the line? It was Honorable Sina Tambo.
If you give me not switching on the video. I think maybe firstly let's just welcome the comprehensive presentations that were presented to us today and welcome them as well. A lot of what I wanted to touch on was touched on by Honorable Lizzie, but I think perhaps just to make a note about how I find it a bit ironic that he's called how they cut intro to previous particular may affect. We had mentioned this when we were debating the budget just the other week, but that's the discussion I think we can have on the side. So I have just a comment. The issues of ICT infrastructure at Tibet College, just admit that the lack of ICT at level has had effect on how these institutions are run, particularly in terms of them being funding to be able to run, as being able to then be assistance financial from NASFAT. Because it depends on comprehensive administrative education from institutions and the fact that we have from many Tibet colleges in terms of them not being able to do this and being able to see funding in due course is because of their lack of ICT infrastructure capacity. So I think it's something that we must deal with at a high level in terms of assisting them with that, which is why I'm saying that Honorable Lizzie has to put on those sentiments. I think that other than ensuring that that which of their budget is not used, we must be able to also... I'm not sure if I'm still audible, Chair.
Yes, you are. I can hear you loud and clear.
Sure. So we must also be able to do a high-level intervention in terms of ensuring ICT capacity is in the Tibet sector. And I think that the department must consider doing some sort of joint venture with the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies. Because to leave it to these institutions to subjectively handle their own sort of infrastructure development and ICT development has shown that it's an exercise in futility. So we as a department, as a sector, must be able to do cooperative sort of initiatives that will intervene as well, because it's long overdue. The problem with not intervening, the crisis that we may face in the sector at a high level is that perpetuate the lack Tibet sector seems to have in our country, because many of our people are more drawn to university education, and this of course leads to this very high demand of students trying to get into the sector regardless of whatever qualification they're pursuing. So the pursuance of certain qualifications in the university sector are not necessarily on the basis of a desire education, but it's more of a status thing. And that does not serve well for our developmental prospects as a country. So in order to ensure the Tibet sector, which is a critical sector in any developmental nation, if it takes a vocational enterprise and industry and artisans can be the pillar of an economy, but that is only if the educational sector that deals with that is competent enough and appealing enough. And the lack of ICT capacity that leads to funding issues in that sector, the contributing factor in the general populace not being drawn to going into the Tibet sector. We must sort of think around that intervention and cooperative initiative in terms of improving infrastructure there as well. And of course, fighting much more passionately to ensure that funding is not cut from a developmental sector. So the second question, which is something I point upon quite a lot, is that is the department of the view that, or what is the view of the department in terms of student debt hindering transformation within the higher education sector? Because I listened to Tandi illustrating how the levels of student debt and how they continue to increase year by year. So I'm curious as to whether, particularly for those who have achieved their qualifications and have their qualifications withheld from them. Of course, we know there's various avenues of agencies speaking directly to institutions of higher learning to confirm whether someone has acquired their qualification, should they have their qualifications held due to debt. But I think internally in the higher education sector, the student debt not contribute to the slow transformation level, at the level of who is teaching in terms of race and gender, who gets to get into the higher levels of education in terms of honors, masters, and PhD, which of course also determines who becomes a professor. I'm curious on the opinion of the department in terms of what is their view in terms of student debt and its relationship with transformation or the lack thereof in the sector itself. Other than that, I think we need to have a seriously meaningful conversation around infrastructure development of ICT in South Africa, because the COVID-19 virus seems as if it's going to die. And I think that we must accept that reality and also ensure that we prepare ourselves for that eventuality. Other than that, thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Chavele, are you still there? Okay.
Oh, yes, I am. Yeah, no, I'm reconnected again. Thanks. The next person is it Honorable Luigi? Honorable Delmain, Christian. Sorry about that. Over to you, Honorable Christian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to appreciate the department as well for their presentation as well as MISFAS. I think it was an undeniably hard year last year, and I think this year will continue to be a hard year for many of the educational institutions in South Africa. And with that, I would just like to agree with what many of my colleagues have spoken about online teaching and learning. It has now become the norm across the world that we have to switch over to online learning. So we have heard the department telling us in more detail how they will address this, especially in terms of the third wave coming, and especially in terms of the fact that it doesn't seem as if COVID is abating and will abate during the rest of the year. So, and especially with regard to the inequalities that continue to exist in our country, how will the department actively address connectivity, ICT in the country? We've heard that it's been months now that the department has been speaking about the laptop disbursement to students, and still there are issues with that. Connectivity at colleges and universities remain an issue, especially in provinces like the Northern Cape, the Eastern Cape, which are extremely rural areas where connectivity is very, very slow and non-existing. So I would have liked to have heard, the department speaking about budgets for enabling connectivity at these institutions to speed it up and to see to it that no student is left behind. My next question is about pass rates and certifications, especially at TVET colleges. Now, at TVET colleges, we know that students require a certain amount of subjects to be passed before they can be certified. The native subjects, they need to pass all four subjects before they can be certified. So MISFAS spoke about the high failure rate at TVET colleges. So I would like the department to, and I mean, if they can't give that information to us now, I would have liked to have heard what were the pass rates like then during the COVID period, because there is a concern that TVET college students need to be on campus to engage with the practical component. So I'd have liked to have heard what the pass rates are, and if the pass rates were low, what exactly is the department doing to assist students to actually get them to pass all their subjects and to get them certified. I would have also liked to have heard more in depth how student attendance and engagement impacted students and what the dropout rates looked like across the sectors of TVET colleges and universities. Then lastly, to NSFAC. Now, in light of the legacy systems of NSFAC, before, they advertised a tender for the ICT disbursement system. That tender was advertised and the tender was withdrawn again. And I just want to know by NSFAC, is this something that they are looking at again? Are they trying to upgrade their ICT system? Or will the institution remain with the wallet system? Are they happy with the way the wallet system is going at the moment? Thank you very much, Chairperson. That's all from me.
Chancellor Christians, giving over to Duduzile Sibiya, it's your turn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thanks, Chairperson. There is a terrible noise outside. And thanks for my presentation. But because I was disturbed by this noise, about the appeals rejected, 7,858, and appeals withdrawn, can they elaborate more? Because I'm not clear if we are talking about appeals withdrawn, what was the cause of those appeals which were withdrawn? And again, so far it's covered in Southwest, Southern Tibet, Coast Bay, and Rubenella Tibet colleges. There is a connectivity problem. And the submission, you are saying there were none. But again, you are saying the application process at these colleges had to be postponed to 2021. If you can be specific, which month are you talking about in 2021? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Sibiyo. I'd like to check from what is this slide 24 to 29. Slide 24 to 29, where they talk about TVET colleges registration. Can we have a province-to-province breakdown and at the same time highlight the challenges for each province? I'm saying that because as the NCOP focuses on provinces, to the province, these are the challenges and these are the interventions that we are making. Rather, yeah, I think that would be also nice. And that is between slide 24 to 29. And then slide 30, there's talk about the department making 11% progress on SARS appeals. What is the nature of these SARS appeals? And why is the progress at 11%? I'll give over to Honorable, is it Kasa now? Yeah, Honorable, there was a Honorable Lihihi, will be followed by Honorable Kasa, and then the co-chair will be the last on this, unless this other hand, the other hand that will emerge as we go. Thanks a lot. Over to you, Honorable Lihihi.
Chair, the presentation suggests that about 66% of 70% university students from NSFAS requested assistance to device to be able to engage on multimedia learning has been assisted. Assuming that the remaining 4% not been assisted, have you called receiving a device without no internet connection or data allowance for students to be able to engage with their learning is the same as not having any device at all. Many students across the land are raising concerns that allowance for data has not been received. These
Hello, we let them maybe Honorable Gaza, tell Honorable Luigi, Honorable Gaza. Till 10.
Magasa is muted.
Can we help Magasa to unmute? Is there somebody who can do that? While we're waiting for Honorable Gaza.
Am I audible now, Honorable Chairperson?
Yes, I can hear you well now. Thanks.
Chairperson, I will run to this. I'm not honorable from the department. May I come through?
Can we take the questions from the members first and then we'll come, unless if there's something that we think we are missing?
No problem, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Co-Chair, it's your turn.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Nchavele. I just have some few questions. I think colleagues have raised those questions. The two questions I have, one is on the student debt. There was a 1.7 billion made available in 2018 to cover the debt of students who are NSFAS funded. So the presentation says that that allocation is still awaiting to be audited so that we can find out how much was spent. I think it was for 2018, 2019, and 2020, if I'm not mistaken. Now, do we have a sense of how much was utilized of that 1.7 billion? Because one of the biggest challenge that is faced by the students, which manifests itself particularly during the registration period, is the debt that the students are having, which sometimes prohibit them from registering, because the universities normally employ some means to get this debt to be paid, and normally they utilize that during their registration. So it's becoming a very big issue, and as we know, all of us, that this debt keeps on growing. So if there is an allocation that has been made, I think the priority should be to make sure that those students who qualify, who are supposed to have been funded, this money is utilized. It's concerning me that up to how much of that money was used and how many students were covered. So I'm going to ask that we get some answers on that one. The other issue which I would like to to raise, which I've been raising in the past, is that, you see, one of the things that COVID has done in the sector is to put to the fore the inequalities that have existed historically because of how the system was initially set up. Because we know that the system was set up, especially the university system, to benefit only a certain race group, which was privileged historically. Later on, there had to be an introduction. of a much more junior in terms of prestige, in terms of class, and so forth, which then got to be referred to as historically disadvantaged. Black universities that catered for Africans in particular, and blacks in general. And so that system, that inequality in the system, continued to perpetuate. And this, you know, we got to be reminded, so COVID was sort of a stark reminder to these inequalities that continues to exist in the system of higher education, despite our intervention. And so, as a result of this, I think we got to be presented with a situation where the historically advantaged institution put measures in place and they utilize their resources to make available means for their students to further their studies by way of allocating resources in terms of the gadgets, by way of making sure that they allocate data, by way that they put in infrastructure available for this multimodal system of learning and teaching to exercise, you know, where these universities were advancing much more rapidly than the other universities which were historically disadvantaged. And so this two system was playing itself out as the universities in particular were rushing to complete the academic year. And that's why if you look at the completion, you will find a situation where this historically advantaged institution were the first to complete the academic year, and then followed by the others, the last of which I think was the Tshwane University of Technology. And so I think part of the lessons that we need to draw from this is not how, it's more on how are we, what interventions are required to close this gap. So, which is a matter that I did not see it coming from the department. There's been some intervention around infrastructure and all of that. But I think that in our lifetime, I think we'd want to see the closing of the gap between the historically disadvantaged and the historically advantaged universities. So I would like to get some comments on that. It would have been good if the leadership, political leadership, was still here, because I think something much more drastic is required, something much more serious intervention to turn this situation around in terms of the inequalities in the sector. Lastly, the infrastructure in the TVET College, I think the colleagues have also spoken to this, but I want to get a sense of the leadership of the TVET branch. What do they think is required in terms of attending to this, especially the infrastructure challenges and the connectivity? I know that before COVID, I think the TVETs, 20% of them, according to the presentation, were offering mostly online learning and so forth. And at the end, I think it was about 80%, which was a very good improvement. But the challenges remain and are located in the far area. Yes, what do you think should be the intervention to address these infrastructure challenges? Well, we know that there is money that was meant for infrastructure that was taken away to address the NSFAS backlog. But even the one that was allocated in the past, the expenditure, as we know, was not very good. I think it was over almost 60% of the money allocated which was spent. So which points out to the capacity constraints as far as spending the money allocated is concerned. But what are the ideas? Because we can't just leave this alone and hope that there will be some divine intervention to address this infrastructure backlog. Otherwise, thank you very much, Honorable Chavele.
Thanks, Co-Chair. I had the hand of and let me say welcome back to the DM back in the meeting. And welcome Honorable Mukachwa, and your hand is up. We were told that you will join us later. You're welcome. It's your turn.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chabeling, and good morning to colleagues on the platform. I just have perhaps remarks that are more recommendations. I know that the presentation VHEP speaking to research that's supposed to be done was by the CHE and other institutions, and I think I personally would really appreciate people who were looking to, you know, an analysis of, a true reflection analysis of whether or not both lecturers, in terms of teaching and students in terms of learning, what their experiences were during COVID, and how the future of the higher learning in Africa post-COVID looked like with regards to that. So we have, for example, you know, a lot of institutions reverting to continuous assessment as opposed to short question assessment, as opposed to MCQ, as opposed to many other types of assessments. And one would really want to know what impact that then has on the type of experience that the lecturer and the students both have in both the TVET program and the university program. So one really looks forward to that particular that analysis being made. And one, particularly in reflection to the success rate of the 2020 academic year, which by and large most institutions have reflected to have increased. Some institutions have even indicated, or many institutions have even indicated, that the participation rate had gone up. And what do we measure participation by? A student being present for the exam, a student logging into an online platform, a student submitting an assignment. So that's the type of research that one really would recommend that the department look strongly into in order for us to really create a perspective on how the future of higher education in South Africa could look like post-COVID-19. I'd also like to recommend a strong analysis on the ICT infrastructure in institutions of higher learning post-COVID-19, an analysis on accommodation in institutions of higher learning post-COVID-19. How does that look like? What is the capacity when we look at students who opted to stay at home, these are the students who demanded to be on campus, what could the dynamics in relation to accommodation in South Africa perhaps change? How could municipalities and cities then alleviate strain from the higher education sector by ensuring that there's access to information and communication technology infrastructure within our cities by creating Wi-Fi hotspots and even creating learning centers in our communities, or even strengthening the presence of our libraries through the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture. And perhaps that means that we, as the Select Committee and the Portfolio Committee, could perhaps need to have a conversation with the Department of the Portfolio Committee in communications with the Portfolio Committee and the Sports, Arts and Culture. And I think those are, for me, recommendations going into the future. And one would even want to know how far we are in expanding programs such as the Imbali project, which is in KZN, and seeing that find expression in many other cities in our country, so as to create an ecosystem of higher education and training within our communities where the one program can sort of piggyback on the other. Because I think that's one thing that you know, we need to strengthen, as opposed to developing the sector in silos, or even developing our country in silos. And then I think the last sort of reflection that I would appreciate going into the future in greater depth is the reflection that as a program at large, the issues around rotation and the infrastructure of institutions of higher learning. So from my side, Chair, more than anything, it's work that I think we need to be doing proactively as we go into the future, because as Honourable Nadia has said, the third wave is coming, and I think multimodal learning has been taking place in our country, but has been greatly exacerbated by COVID-19, and it's something that we need to see as an opportunity for us to reflect on how the higher education and training sector could look like post COVID-19. So from my side, Chair, also speaking to an analysis on expenditure in institutions of higher learning pre-COVID-19, post-COVID-19, how has that changed? What are institutions spending more on now than they were spending more on prior to COVID-19? So from my slide, Chair, that's about it, but we really truly appreciate the presentation by the department. Thank you so much.
You are welcome, Honorable Mkhashwa. Are there further issues that members would like to raise before I open for the DG and the DM to give answers to some of the questions? I see the hand of Gaza. Whether you will talk after the... Okay, let me give you over to you, Gaza. The floor is yours. You hand this up.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I'm visible. And let me start by saying, let me convey my apologies for speaking after my principals, having been a public servant for long. I apologize for speaking after my principals, but I felt let me convey my apologies, because more often than not, this is not ideal. To speak after principals have spoken. I thought, let me just make about 3 points that I thought Pierce would just highlight things from my side, perhaps respond to some of the key issues that would perhaps help with some of the issues that have been raised. The first point, Chairperson, that I thought that I would raise is the point that pertains to key issues around mental health issues and GBF and femicide, which are very critical at this point in time. And highlight that these are issues that SD has, we are mindful of, and I don't want to belabor the point, just highlight the fact that we are mindful of those points, of those critical points, indicate that, as we have mentioned in earlier meetings, that we are working with Higher Health and the number of other stakeholders, and that we are working with Higher Health to ensure that we are taking a three-pronged approach. One, of ensuring that we've taken a three-pronged approach. One, of ensuring that we take one of prevention. We take one of support, and we psychosocial support, and the members would have been advised that in many ways we are working with Higher Health to ensure that we attend to issues of gender-based violence and femicide, and we also take together with with Higher Health an issue of attending to COVID. We take one of gender-based violence and femicide, and we take one of ensuring that we attend to issues of psychosocial support to students. And then the second issue, without wasting honorable members time, is the issue of taking to issues of just yesterday, we are working between ourselves as DBSA, NSFAS, and ourselves as SDHET to attend to issues of infrastructure and ensuring that we attend to issues of infrastructure as have been raised here, and we are mindful of honorable members and the issues that have been raised here across the spectrum, be they universities, be they be they teaching colleges, and be they in the long term as CET colleges, and in the longer term issues pertaining to the skills branch. And at an appropriate time, we would really like the opportunity to table to the committee what we are trying to do to make sure that we give the committee the comfort that we are attending to the challenges that beset the PSET infrastructure challenges infrastructure challenges and what we are trying to do to address the fragmentation, the challenges that face the BSET infrastructure challenges in terms of financing, and what needs to be done to take the system so that's the second issue that I wanted to raise. The third point that I
excuse me, Nicholas.
Yes, ma'am.
I was going to say that going forward, I gave you an opportunity to raise the issues you raised, which is very good. But we've got a system that we follow here. After the questions are asked, other people will make additions. It's very valuable. But at the same time, it is also part of responding to issues that were raised by members. So what I'm going to do now is to cut you off for now. And then after the GG has done, then if there are issues that you would like to add on top, then you can make those contributions. Thank you very much. It was quite an eye opener. May I give this opportunity to the DG, the DM, to respond to issues as raised by members. Some of the comments by Megas have actually answered some of the questions that were raised in the past and now. Thank you, and over to you, PG, and welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair, for this opportunity to clarify quite a number of issues that have been raised by the honourable members, and we also appreciate the comments as well as some suggestions that have actually come through this engagement, and we're certainly going to take those forward in our dealings and the workings in the system of the post-school education and training. Perhaps, Chair, at this time, let me allow Tandi as well as Mr. Zungu to come in respect to the sectors they are exposed to. Then I'll come later on and give over to the DM to wrap up as the executive authority who is with us today. Can you come in, Tandi, then Mr. Zungu?
Thank you, DG, and thank you very much to the honourable members of both committees for, as DG has said, there's some really important suggestions and some critical issues that are being raised, which keeps us focused on some of the issues that we need to be analysing and looking into in the sector, and also some very important trends in terms of the questions that I'll try and respond to them as a group. So a number of questions on student debt, issues of access to data and study, conducive environments for studying, issues of relating to certificates and then also college and things like that. Maybe just in terms of at the start about, particularly about Mpumalanga, but referring in general to students that are based in rural areas, I think it is an important issue to raise in terms of the priority issues that we need to address in terms of accommodation for students and the fact that not all students are able to access accommodation that is necessarily either on campus or close to campus. But of course, this is something that universities work on in their own environments, and particularly with the new universities, there's quite a strong relationship established with the local and provincial governments in terms of the development plans for those universities. So quite a significant amount of work going on in terms of trying to ensure that as the campuses develop, there's also a requisite development of student accommodation, whether it is securing appropriate private accommodation, but also working to develop on-campus provision as much as possible for students. So there is a growth, but also what's important, Chair, is that, and this relates to the broader issues that Honourable King had also raised around access to data, access to Wi-Fi. It's really important that universities are able to prioritise return to campus for students who really are not able to study effectively in their home environments due to connectivity issues and space and other issues, and that those students are able to return to campus where actually Wi-Fi provision is mostly very good, certainly compared, across the country there's been huge improvements in the networking at institutions. Granted, there's a whole lot of ICT infrastructure work that we have picked up now, in particular at the beginning of this year, and in quite an intensive process engaging with universities around what was to be the first phase of the infrastructure and efficiency grant. Unfortunately, much of that work is going to have to be postponed, although it is likely that universities, where possible, will pick up on some of those emergency projects, particularly where it relates to the ICT infrastructure and cybersecurity issues, learning management systems, etc., that are absolutely critical now, given that we are, as many members have pointed out, still about to go into the third wave, if not already in the third wave, and of course, likely to be living with the pandemic for much of the rest of this academic year. So some really important points, but also the point that Honourable Nkashwa makes about needing to really understand issues of accommodation and how they also are affected by the new normal and the needs for access to Wi-Fi for students in particular. So I think important points for us in terms of what we should be monitoring and having a website, yes, absolutely critical for supporting students, because particularly where, and this is something that we have got some analysis on in the learning material survey that I referred to in the presentation, that there are many students that where they don't have access to laptops or tablets, that students are actually utilizing smartphones, and very, very high numbers of students have access to smartphones, if not their own, but also family members, and quite a lot of usage of smartphones to access learning material sites, but of course, learning management sites, but of course, not ideal using smartphones, but certainly helping to access, and very important, the zero rating of websites for students to have been able to access the basic interface with their institutions to be able to continue to, access what they needed to keep informed. That has been helpful, and it is critical going forward. Also, there was a question about the national digital, I think it was Honourable Letier, question about the digital sites license. There is ongoing work on that at the level of also working with the Department of Science and Innovation, and absolutely critical for us as a system to be able to get to a point where we are pooling resources in terms, especially digital and open learning resources, to be able to decrease the cost that individual institutions are spending on libraries and accessing digital materials for students. And so there's quite a lot, that work has indeed become much more urgent and really a priority for us working with Department of Science and Innovation, and of course working with USAF and the university system and other key role players in that. In terms of the financial issues and the issue of certificates, certainly just to indicate that certainly there have been, where there are concerns that students are having difficulty, we do engage with institutions, and indeed where there shouldn't be problems from the employer's side, because they should be able to accept that students have received their as much as they haven't received their physical certificates, they have received some of their degrees. But what specifically is that at the point of discussions with the South African Union of Students earlier this year, at the time of the registration protest, we had some quite in-depth discussion with the USAF on this, and University of South Africa is working with the system to try and develop a more streamlined approach, an aligned approach where we can say that all the institutions are doing similar things in this regard, so that we have comfort and students have comfort that when they do have debt, that they are able to access what they need to access in order to gain further employment, to be able to get jobs, and also to be able to do further study. So we are working on that, and hope in the very near future to have a more coordinated approach in the university system, which I think will give comfort to students and their families, as well as to employers, and hopefully we can communicate more on that. But just in terms of NSFAS students and the debt, certainly, I'm sure that NSFAS will be able to give us an update on the historic debt issues and the issue around the historic debt process and how far it is. But certainly, universities know who those students are that qualify in terms of that, and institutions will allow students to register as long as they've signed acknowledgements of that debt. Of course, the delays do cause anxiety for students, but I hope NSFAS will be able to give us an update on where that project is. The analysis of the historic debt and how much of the $14 billion that we've spoken about is NSFAS students. Ideally, given that government has over several years addressed historic debt of NSFAS qualifying students, the debt of NSFAS qualifying students should be fairly low. However, I also indicated in the presentation that we have recently been working with universities on a much more in-depth analysis of this, and hope that we should be able to come back to the portfolio committee with an analysis of that debt, because it is much more up-to-date than the 2019, but also we'll be able to give a sense of the percentages around around how many NISA students have debt, but also in that we need to be able to analyze with NISA and the institutions how much of that is being addressed through the process so that we don't misrepresent those data. And I do hope that we can come back on that. I don't have the figures right now. We are undertaking that analysis at the current time. So that was just on those direct debt. I think whether we resources, I didn't emphasize this, but I think we have made resources available to sort of adjust to the new normal in terms of what it means to have students in residences under pandemic conditions. I think we've got, as Ms. Gaffer had indicated, we've had extensive support from Higher Health, and maybe just to say that, I mean, we're incredibly privileged in a sense as a post-school sector to have an entity that's able to do this work with us, because the work that Higher Health does is not just also in terms of working directly with campuses and TVET colleges and universities as well as BEC colleges, but also to be able to provide scientific advice and support to institutions and to provide us with guidelines. And maybe to indicate that we had at the end of March also issued directions to universities, public and private, in fact, in terms of managing the 2021 academic year with a view to being able to support institutions under any possible lockdown stages, of being aware that the third wave may be coming, and knowing that institutions would have to adjust. And so, for example, there's a discussion in that document around vaccination. There's a discussion around examinations and classes and how they're managed, obviously taking into account the national disaster regulations as well. There's also quite a lot of guidance around the sort of management of the pandemic at institutions, the need for institutions to keep managing in terms of their COVID responsiveness task teams and in that area. So quite a lot of guidance has been given to institutions, and certainly the feedback we've received is that institutions are managing in that aspect, and hopefully we really aren't going to be in a situation where we see institutions having to shut down. But certainly institutions in a better position this year, given that they are able to do more blended learning and that they are able to put in place mechanisms where students come to campus on rotational basis. And also a very important point made by Honourable Kratcher about how we're using our campuses in more staggered ways to try and address some of those issues. There was a question around student debt and its effects on the transformation of the higher education sector. I think an important question from Honourable Tumble. Certainly, student debt is a really big issue of concern for us, and what we are trying to work to in the system, and of course subject to the difficult situation we're in, certainly looking at ways in which we can more effectively provide more comprehensive financial support so that we are able to provide support to missing middle students, as well as to address the relatively low levels of support for postgraduate students. The NRS certainly has adjusted its guidelines this year and is doing more to address the postgraduate funding needs of students who were NISA recipients. But again, you know, that's in the kind of context of there having been overall reductions in some of the budgets, both to the post-school system as well as to the research and the science and innovation system. So yes, it is a concern, but there are multiple programs and a lot of progress is being seen in terms of particularly what Honourable Tambo refers to in terms of who the demographics of the academic staff in the system, and maybe that's something that we can provide more information on in future presentations, because at the same time as addressing the funding challenges, we are also addressing some of those issues through targeted programs with the department in partnership with the universities, and hope that there are big changes happening in that regard. I think a whole lot of questions are very important questions around really understanding pass rates, understanding issues of academic integrity, and maybe Honourable so I'm not sure if you were there for that part of the presentation, but even so, I think we're working very closely with the Council on of Higher Education on this, and I'm hoping that in the next short while we should be able to get some of this data from the teaching and learning and assessment plans that we have now received from institutions. We received them last week, and we are working on a process to do some in-depth analysis on them, because we have asked some of those questions to institutions quite specifically, both the private and public institutions as well, and really very important on that. Just in terms of the issues of, I think I talked to this a little bit, but Honourable Lahihi also asked the question around what happens to those students that don't have laptops. I've addressed that to a certain extent in terms of the understanding that many students try and access through smartphones, and nobody would try to present that using a smartphone is an ideal way to engage with teaching and learning, but certainly many students are doing that where they can't. But in terms of the laptops, many universities are making devices available, and of course this touches on Honourable Mapulane's very critical points about the need to look at the broader transformation of the inequalities in the system. Data allowances were made available by all institutions, and the department's grant was able to assist in allowing students to do this. But of course, once students are back on campus, they have much better access to Wi-Fi, and it's important that we ensure that all students who need to be on campus are able to access campus, are able to access the library and the Wi-Fi facilities that are available on campuses. So very important that we keep an eye on that, and we have started monitoring universities for the 2021 academic year, and I hope that in the next week or so we should be able to get the monitoring report finalized so we can get a sense of what the current situation is. Also around the laptops, given the delays on the NISPA side, certainly many institutions have been dealing with that. Maybe also, and I'm sure Nasrat will also touch on this, but in terms of the policy around the question, I think that I can't remember if it was Honourable King who raised this question around the issue of how students utilise their learning material allowance, which is expected to cover both access to a device as well as access to learning materials. And this is something that we're working on very closely with universities, because universities are, in a sense, the mediating body between institutions and students and how they use their learning material allowance. And really, given that we know that all students need access to a device, the question is, how can universities assist students to be able to access both a device that is then able to be utilized for the full duration of their undergraduate studies, as well as access the necessary learning materials. And certainly the survey that we did showed that students are accessing learning materials in many different ways, as accessing libraries, also a lot of students utilizing secondhand books and textbooks and sharing resources, but also more and more universities, and this relates to the question that Honourable Lestier wants a more specific answer on, is how do we ensure that universities are making available materials much more online and in digital form, so that students, the costs of buying textbooks come down for students. And certainly we're seeing a lot of work across the sector, but we need to do more on that. And Honourable Lestier will get an update on the National Digital Library process and provide you with a written update on that, because I don't have the latest details. I know there have been meetings taking place very recently, but I need to get you a fuller update on the timing of that. In terms of the issues of student access, I just wanted to say initial HEMIS data will be able to start looking in much more depth at what the success rates are looking like, and whether or not there's been, you know, just in terms of what institutions are reporting to us in terms of their monitoring reports and what the system data is showing us, we should be able to get a much stronger sense in the second half of this year as we get those data submissions in, because we do have to rely on audited data from institutions. And of course, given the delays in completing the academic year for 2020, you know, we do have to wait for those data submissions. But certainly a very important set of analysis that we need to do is looking at whether or not there have been any dramatic effects performance and success, but also, you know, interrogating in more depth, as we've said, the issues around academic integrity and the effect of changed forms of assessment on students and what this has meant. Certainly, universities have been doing extensive work on this, but we are trying as a sector to connect that, and we're doing work with the CHE on that. DG, I think I've got so many notes, I'm not sure if I've missed any key questions, but perhaps if I could hand over to my colleague, the DDG for TVET, and then if there are any other key questions, I could just quickly come back or put some of the answers on the chat so that I don't take up the honourable member's time. Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, DG, and thanks, Honourable Chair. I think my colleague, Dr. Lewin, has covered most of the issues, particularly in relation to connectivity, because they cut across whether it's universities or colleges, although I would think that colleges are probably the most affected ones due to them having been so much underfunded over the years. But perhaps the issues, I'll start with the issues raised by Honourable Chair, Honourable Chamberlain, the importance of us having to provide the trend analysis on how many students were able to access the zero-rated sites and also whether there's any correlation. I must say, Honourable Chair, that at the moment that study has not been conducted, but it's something that is very valuable and is going to contribute a lot in this exercise for us to be able to demonstrate the lessons that we have learned throughout that process. So it's something that we'll probably, as a branch, will engage on just to see how many were able to benefit out of this and what was the correlation between them benefiting. I do take note, Honourable Chair, the statistics that were provided from page 23 to 29 that relates to the enrollment target. We just clustered them because TVET colleges are grouped in terms of their regions. Unfortunately, regions will be a combination of probably one or two provinces and not just one province. So we take note of that and will provide the breakdown of those statistics per province so that it can be of benefit to you. The questions around the rural connectivity, I think my colleague has touched on the question raised by Honourable King. In terms of the TVETs, we also do, like university, on rotational basis, the students will come to campuses, they will download the content that is required, and they can then go home, do whatever work and assignments that are required to be done, and then come back in the other week again when the other group is gone to continue and present whatever they were tasked to do. So that is what is happening at the moment. So it works more on a blended learning than on a complete online basis because of the COVID-19. The other issues relating to infrastructure is raised by a number of honourable members, starting with Honourable Etienne, that there is underutilization of the grant. I believe that TVET colleges did experience some problems in terms of the lack of capacity on the utilization of that grant. As a result, some of those monies had to be returned back, but there is a plan to assist them in making sure that those that have been granted this grant is able to assist them. Yes, I think Honourable Etienne raised a very important point in terms of reprioritization of those grants in order to address the bigger need for infrastructure. And I think my colleague, DDG Gasa for planning, will be able to probably expand more on the plans that the department has in terms of the infrastructure rollout for all universities and colleges. The other matter on the placement of students in the workplaces, well, we will try and provide the statistics as they keep on changing from time to time, but probably try and provide the latest statistics. But I must say, Honourable Chair, the establishment by the Department of the Centres of Specialisation is assisting us a lot in terms of addressing the issue of work placement, because found in the the centers of specialization are attached to at the risk of students having to leave the TV college without having a workplace where they can be. But it goes further than that, Honorable Chair. It's not just focusing on students, it also assists our lecturing staff also to have exposure to the very similar companies where our students are placed. We hope that this practice will grow and expand beyond just the centers of specialization. There are, of course, initiatives that happened through the assistance of the skills branch with the SLITAS, which also assist us in terms of expanding on the web placement. But I've listened to the speech of the Honorable Minister, where he was actually saying we should be looking in future on how we recruit students, that perhaps we should be saying as a requirement, the students that should come to the TVET colleges should be students that are already attached to companies. It will then minimize the risk of our students having to graduate and not having been placed in the workplaces. The other issue was around our preparations for the third wave. Yes, there are ongoing engagements between the college principals and management of colleges, getting prepared, as well as our National Examination Assessment Unit, in making sure that, when the devil hits us, we are ready. Yes, the issues of connectivity continue to persist because it's not things that can be done overnight, but we are progressively making strides in ensuring that we are able to overcome that. I think the other point which I left out here in terms of the web placement is the fact that we are looking more at expanding the scope, not just to be limited to big corporates, but also as to how SMEs can also play a role in the issue of work placement. And one that is currently working very well in Germany, in Switzerland, where the focus is not just on big corporates, but you're also looking at small, medium enterprises, increasing work placement for our students. And it's something that we are busy pursuing with the leaders as well to say how can we make sure that they assist in expanding the scope to even those that are not skills-level payers. Because I think we've been confined by the legislation that it's only the skills-level paying companies that can be able to access the funding procedures. So if those scope can be expanded, you can actually be able to place more students in the workplaces. On dropout rates and retention, we will try and provide those statistics within for this presentation and the presentation or make it available, Chair. The issue of the dropout, which we are trying to look with the institutions, it also look at the issue of tracking all our students, those that progressed, those that dropped out, and also trying to find out what were the major reasons for them to drop out so that we can be able to assist them where we could. But it is one of the very disturbing matters where students drop out, because some of them, they will probably drop out having already been funded by NSFAS, and what will be the financial implications of them dropping out to the institution and to the public corpus. So it's something that will probably provide a full report on that one, Chair. On enrollments that are affected by the late release of results, I think one of the contributing factors is that the examinations and assessments happen at institutions. Then the marks are loaded onto the system and then submitted to the department and further to the quality assurance bodies. Now, between that movement, sometimes for instance, if I take in the case of Malusi on the NITEC program, when the marks have been weighted and they've gone through the standardization process, there will always be queries that will be raised by the institutions to say, in our annual marks that we submitted, we believe that this particular student should have progressed to the next level. So as there's been exchange between institutions and the quality assurance, then there will be delays because they have to close those queries before the marks are finalized. So it's one of the areas that we probably have to try and improve. But we also picked up that sometimes there are human errors when they're doing data capturing in terms of the mark, that the wrong mark is captured, and then it goes and then gets challenged at a later stage. And by that time, the students are waiting for their marks and they have not been released, because those must still be resolved before the marks are released. But it is something that our National Examination Assessment Unit is also working on together with the institutions in terms of the accuracy of the data that is submitted to the department and also to the quality assuring bodies. The other measure that was raised by Honorable Tambo Ishai, it was more of an input on him. The department is having an integrated approach in terms of infrastructure development, that is not just physical buildings. All the new cadets that have infrastructure on them in terms of IT, but we don't plan as if we are planning for a 1940 building, but it's a new type of buildings that are technical savvy, and also we align to the digital strategy of the department in ensuring that we don't find ourselves in the situation that we are finding ourselves in. So going forward, as part of the infrastructure, it will be including the issues of ICT infrastructure as well. I'll just touch on other matter that was raised by Honorable Christians, the plans to continue teaching and learning. I think, yes, the connectivity has already been touched on, as well as the issue of dropouts that she also raised, and the issue of the pass rates and or throughput rates for the TVET colleges, which will then make a presentation on, a full presentation on. Honorable Spear raised a question on colleges with connectivity challenges and applications postponed till 2021. It was the applications for the last quarter of 2020 that has to be deferred for 2021 due to the connectivity issues. I think she was asking for which period were those. It was the last quarter of 2020. In terms of the issue on allowance for data not rolled out completely, it is a challenge, Honorable Chair, because for the students to access the learning content when they are at home, they need to have access to data. But we are hoping that going forward, we shall be able to get a platform where students can download all the data that they need for the particular or for the duration of their studies, which they can then easily access at home without having to use huge amount of data for them. The only shortcoming on that one is that that only helps when you are having a blended learning system, because if it's completely online, then there has to be an interaction between the lecturer and the students where they are able to provide feedback timeously. And I think I will probably, Honorable Chair, end there in terms of those responses. The Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee asked if there are any plans in place of trying to address the issue or the capacity issues of addressing the infrastructure backlog, which I believe the DDG for planning will probably respond to the person and the DG.
Thank you very much. I don't know your time now. Maybe Ms. Gasa would like to come in briefly.
Let us give Megasa a chance to talk to her. Can give her a chance.
Apologize, Chairperson, there is some aeroplane that is moving fast, and so maybe you might not hear me very well, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Let me first apologize, and I hope that I have not caused offense in my earlier comments, and seek your apology. and put my comments in context, and apologize also to my DG. My comments earlier on were grounded in the fact that as the DG and the DG and the minister in earlier context has always and then the minister have always indicated that the branch key has indicated that the branch key is responsible for coordinating the infrastructure is going to be coordinated is going to be responsible for the coordination of infrastructure. So I appeal all honorable members for your apology. Please, if you could accept my apology for the comments that I made earlier on, and I hope that I created no offense.
You are welcome, Megazo. Just public service, and that people who are new are afraid sometimes to talk. So you're welcome. Just go straight to the point.
No, absolutely. So in essence, I will not be long, Chairperson. As the BDGs that have spoken, in essence, the point that I was coming from was to just basically say that in the main, as Branch P, we will be working with all of the DDGs under the guidance of DG Konde to make sure that we, we are wanting to make sure that we coordinate infrastructure going forward in collaboration with the DPSA and NSFAS in taking the work forward, and in essence ours is to make sure that we push the work forward and we address the issues of fragmentation, pushing the work forward and ensuring that in any spaces where there are delays, we make sure that we push the work forward, working in unison, and ensuring that we are held accountable by ourselves. This is what we would like to do. Chair, let me stop there. And I think that the DDGs have clarified what I intended to communicate. And I think that this is very clear. And I trust that no offense has been created. Mine is to, as the DDG for planning, to coordinate going forward, and I intended no honorable members. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Kasa. Chair, all the questions have been responded to quite extensively. Perhaps issues that we need to follow up on them, we'll do that guided by the committee. Some of the important questions that are raised, for instance, Honorable Member Tambo, in respect to maybe the impact of student debt installing transformation. But basically, in respect to this particular matter, there are quite a number of programs that we are rolling out, both at undergrad as well as postgrad, in order to address and fast-track the question of transformation in the system. For instance, all NEFAS qualifying students at a cap of 350,000 combined family income, they do not have a burden of debt, because that what was identified earlier on, there was intervention of releasing funds from elsewhere in order to pay for that particular debt. So the question of access at undergrad has actually increased exponentially over 60 or 70% of student population at university now is mainly black students. And at postgrad, there are interventions under the program Staffing South Africa's University Framework, which is looking at identifying very capable students at undergrad level, nurture them, and give them support up to a postgrad. NGAP, identifying posts in institutions, creating them, and institutions, they come also with their funds to advance the training of black academics in the main. 80% of that intervention should be black women, and also postdoctoral students that are actually supported by allocating funds to train the lecturers that are there who do not have PhDs to attain those PhDs. And 80% of them, again, black women. There are quite a number of programs to address this question of transition, some limited resources. And the chair of the portfolio committee raised quite important issues in respect to the question of inequalities. Even in there, there are interventions, though they may not be enough. But what I wanted to emphasize, there are interventions now that are rolled out, including the participation of the National Treasury, of the notion of zero-based budgeting. We hope in this process of zero-based budgeting, we'll be able to look right from scratch in respect to allocation and utilization of voted funds in the system. Amongst the interventions that we're looking at is to ensure that historical disadvantaged institutions, they get a better share of the resources as they would be flowing from the state. So there are quite a number of interventions that are happening in addressing this particular question, but we can elaborate at some stage. Back to you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thanks, DG. Are there members who want to make raise that of me having a problem with the challenge of time? There's an MCOP sitting today in the afternoon, so, and a chair of chair meeting that is continuing at the same time. Noltando, how are we doing in terms of time? So that I could take a second batch of questions.
I think the chair, according to the program, is 5 minutes.
To round up the meeting. Let me take this opportunity to thank everybody and then give the DMO light to say something in closure. And that some of the questions that are not answered, the details will be sent to all members. You talked about, was it Metandi? who said they'll send the information to Honorable Tia. That information will be shared by all members because the questions belong to the committee. DM, you want to say some words in closure?
I think it's muted, Chair.
Okay. In the absence of the Chair, of the CM, will you give closing remarks and then I'll give over to the Chair, to the Co-Chair to give his closing remarks and we call it a day. Thank you. DG.
No, thank you very much, Chair, for the engagement and the FDR guiding. We'll take forward things that we need a follow-up on them. We really appreciate it this time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks. Honorable Co-Chair, you want to close in remarks?
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Nchabele, for steering the ship and presiding over the second part. I think we're very, very good engagement, very productive. Members were able to raise questions as robustly as they normally do. look, some of the issues that have been raised are for long-term planning. They may not necessarily require instance and quick responses, and that's it. These are matters that the department will have to take back and to factor them, these suggestions that members are coming up, as part of their planning going forward. There were not too many questions for NSFAS, or were they answered by the department? The NSFAS delegation did not really come back to respond to some of the questions. I guess maybe those questions that were meant for NSFAS can be responded to in writing. My apologies. Those questions can be responded to in writing and members can get the questions. There were issues around the debt, the student debt, as it relates to the NSFAS qualifying students, which Tandy said NSFAS was going to respond to, but unfortunately they were not able to. So those kind of questions NSFAS as to how is NSFAS dealing with those kind of questions. But I think in the overall, the picture looks good. I think one of the important things to observe is that despite the challenges that we experienced last year, all the institutions, the TVET colleges, all the universities were able to conclude the academic year for 2020, with the latest, as I said before, being TUT, which is good that we experienced that. So we learned some lessons, and going forward, there must be all hands on deck to make sure that the 2021 academic year is completed in time, in December, so that it doesn't have to spill through in 2022. Because if it does so, there are also financial implications for that, which we've seen the impact that it had on NSFAS qualifying students. But I think the experiences give us information for better planning, for better management of this pandemic as we move forward. As members have said, we have now been hit by the third wave. It's coming very thick and fast. Many of our colleagues are getting infected. Many of our friends, our family members are getting admitted into hospitals and other health facilities. And so it is real. The third wave is coming, so it's possible that there might be some restrictions imposed in the system as well. So we must use our experiences to plan better. But otherwise, we had a very good meeting, and I would like to thank all the members and wish them well for the rest of the afternoon. This meeting stands adjourned, but I would like to thank you, Honorable Chabeling, for co-chairing the meeting with me. Thank you very much, Honorable Members, the DM in absentia, and the Chair of the Board of NSFAS, the CEO and the DTGs, and the President today. Thank you very much. We are